The waterfront near downtown Bellingham was, for more than a century, a center of heavy industry. The paper company Georgia Pacific closed its doors more than a decade ago here, and since that time, there's been a concerted effort to redevelop some 237 acres into a place people can use, whether they're building boats or running a store, or trying to find a place to live, or maybe just launching a kayak into the bay. But it is a question that is bigger than just Bellingham, as a lot of communities in Western Washington reconsider how they interact with the environment. So we began our chat with KNKX environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe, who told me about some of the issues affecting the Salish Sea Basin and the state of Washington. She says the coal terminal that was proposed for Cherry Point near Bellingham is a prime example of the interconnectedness of communities, industry, and the environment.
Gateway Pacific was going to be receiving coal shipments from the Powder River Basin in Wyoming and Montana, and to take that coal by train, it would come in near Spokane, Washington, go down through the Columbia River Gorge and in this U-shaped route up along the coast of western Washington till it reached Cherry Point.
So through Tacoma, through Seattle.
Through Tacoma, Seattle, all of these communities. And so what happened was there was opposition locally here, but also once people understood how the route of the trains would be going, these long coal trains and increasing numbers of them, there was a concern from all these communities about this. And you had hearings all over the state about it. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the Lummi tribe sued or made known that they were concerned about their treaty fishing rights. And that was what led to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers denying the permit for this facility.
So the Lummi Nation was central to preventing that coal terminal. And it's sort of an example of how many different nations touch the Salish Sea, which surrounds us here. A while back, you reported a big series called Return to the Salish Sea, many parts looking at the waters that stretch from the South Puget Sound up through the Strait of Juan de Fuca, the Strait of Georgia. Mm. This is a term, the Salish Sea, that was coined by a man named Bert Weber, a professor at Western Washington University.
When you start to think and ask the question, how many sovereign nations are there that are involved in the Salish Sea? It's well over 60. And each one of those sovereign nations has some sort of legal right to some resources in the Salish Sea. And how we deal with that is a very difficult question, and we're just really starting on that path of finding the social justice and the equity that needs to happen to provide the rights that the indigenous people still have.
So that speaks to how many different stakeholders there are in environmental changes around here and changes to the shape of this place, what happens here. We talked a little bit about coal trains moving through. What do we know about oil moving through?
Right. I mean, and the Lummi's opposition to the developments at Cherry Point were a really important, I think, example of how tribes can have power in the United States to stop an energy development like that. You know, oil is also obviously an issue. You see those big trains with the oil cars rumbling around our state as well. We have five refineries here, several of them in the area around Bellingham. But when I think of oil right now, the biggest story in the environmental beat is, of course, the Kinder Morgan pipeline expansion, which is proposed. That would be an oil pipeline that terminates in Burnaby, north of Vancouver, B.C., and it would send about three times as much oil as is currently there through the Salish Sea, largely on tankers. And so there's been a lot of concern and opposition about this pipeline. And the thing that has put it on hold for now, right now, is a lawsuit from First Nations. In Canada, there is a constitutional right to be consulted if your tribal territory is being affected by a project of this kind. And the courts ruled in favor of the First Nations and said that improper consultation took place and that needs to be fixed.
So we're trying to sort of set the stage here. And I think it's important to remember something that happened about 20 years ago as well. There are lots of oil and petroleum pipelines running through this area of the country nearly 20 years ago. Whatcom County, where we're sitting now, was the site of the worst pipeline rupture in the state. This was a very serious thing that happened, and it's still a very fresh memory here.
Indeed it is, yeah. June 10th, 1999, a fireball rolled down Whatcom Creek in a public park, and three people were killed. One, a young fly fisherman, just 18 years old. He apparently fainted from fumes from this rupture in the pipeline and drowned in the creek. And two young boys who were just 10 years old were playing nearby and died of their burn injuries the following day. So this was a huge tragedy. And it did lead to some new regulations, and so there have been some improvements. But it's important to note, you know, pipelines are interesting because on some level, you know, the state likes them. They can regulate them more effectively on a state level than the railroads that cross jurisdictions. But they're invisible in ways that maybe it's harder to keep the public aware about them. And it's important to remember that they do get leaks and they spill. And, you know, a lot of that goes on.
What does the future look like here in terms of how we get energy, how we use energy? Are we at a turning point in terms of the fuels we consume and our sources of energy? Is there a change in trajectory here?
Oh, I wish I could answer that with great authority. I would say, you know, one report that I read said that there were about 26 proposals for expansions of infrastructure like Cherry Point and Longview and others over the past 6 years or so. And we've seen several of those stopped by community opposition and concerns and permitting procedures. Whether those ultimately all go forward, you know, it's important to look at, for example, the price of coal is a decisive factor in some of these and whether they go forward. Is that true of natural gas? Well, there's a big debate going on in Tacoma right now about the liquid natural gas facility there. We'll see if that goes forward. Longview is still kind of hanging in the balance with a lot of interior states upset about the state of Washington's decision to reject that. So we'll see. Governor Inslee was elected on a clean energy platform, and he really wants to move the state towards those developments. We see a lot of big, exciting ones in our future. We talked about one in the last Connects broadcast.
In Centralia and Chehalis.
In Centralia and Chehalis, the plan to put in the largest solar installation on the site of former coal mines. Wouldn't that be interesting? Mm. But, you know, it's not fully approved yet, so we'll have to see if that happens. Right now, clean energy, the alternatives to these fossil fuel developments, still requires a fair amount of support, and there's technology missing in terms of storage for the intermittent sources of wind and solar power. So there's a lot of questions still to be answered.
All right, so before we let you go, I have to say, I sit next to Bellamy in the newsroom. I've worked at the station less time than you. I came about 5 years ago to this station. I've only known you as the environment reporter, but you used to be the business and labor reporter. What made you switch? Why did you want to cover environmental news?
Well, pretty much because of the puzzle that I was just alluding to right then. I mean, I did spend a lot of time on the business and labor beat, and I learned a lot. But I think really one of the most interesting challenges and puzzles of our time is how will we power our future? So it's, you know, the environment beat is about endangered species and nature and the natural environment. That's all very interesting and wonderful to get out and report on at times. But in terms of the really strong challenges that we face as a society, it's, you know, how are we going to solve the climate crisis? How are we going to have all of the conveniences that we've come to rely on, you know, in the form of energy without suffocating ourselves?
You just came into town today because you just got off a plane yesterday. You were at the Society of Environmental Journalists conference in Flint, Michigan. That's an important place for environmental reporters right now. Clean water was a recurring topic because of the poisoning, essentially, of Flint's drinking water. Did you learn anything there that ties into what's happening here in the Salish Sea Basin?
Oh, sure. I mean, there were lots of great sessions on water quality, lead poisoning, of course, in Flint. You know, talk about cleanup and restoration of industrial areas that are very familiar to me from Tacoma and Seattle, for example. But probably the biggest and most interesting takeaway in terms of the relation to the Salish Sea was thinking about the Great Lakes Basin and that area, which, you know, is huge and obvious as a shared ecosystem between the U.S. and Canada. And it has been regulated as a joint venture between those two countries because of its role in commerce and industry for a very long time. And so there are, I think, more established protocols for how to do that. And so I'm really curious to dig into understanding maybe what could we learn from the Great Lakes in terms of our regulation of the Salish Sea, which is a fairly newly recognized ecosystem, only, you know, coming literally onto the map by the geographic boards, recognized, you know, only around 2009 and 10.
Literally onto the map.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Bellamy Palethorpe, KNKX Environment Reporter, thank you for that overview and thank you for your work.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to a special edition of All Things Considered, live from the Mount Baker Theater in Bellingham. We're having a conversation tonight about the environment in Western Washington, in the Salish Sea, around the Salish Sea, and more specifically about changes to the waterfront here in Bellingham. And I want to zoom in a little on that area now. We're going to welcome two people who are very familiar with the waterfront here. They've been working for years to make it into something that can be used by all of Bellingham. Eleanor Hines is the North Sound Baykeeper lead scientist for the group Resources for Sustainable Communities. That group started in 1982 with the focus on curbside recycling at the time, but their mission now encompasses a much bigger environmental picture, and Eleanor kind of promotes sustainability through a combination of science, education, and advocacy. We also have Brian Gowron here. He's Environmental and Planning Director at the Port of Bellingham. The port is working with the city to redevelop the waterfront in a way that can be of value to the community as a whole, retailers, apartment or condo dwellers, light industry. The city has said that heavy industry's days are over on the waterfront, and there's many more uses that need to be looked at now. So let's set the scene on the waterfront here in Bellingham. Brian, I want to start with you. We're talking about 237 acres right now at the foot of Bellingham's downtown area. And at the moment, a lot of it is kind of this big open space with a few remnants of industry still visible. Can you describe what the waterfront area looked like a decade ago, right after Georgia Pacific closed?
Yeah, it's a much different look today than it was a decade ago. And actually, when I was at Western Washington University, looking from the Union down onto the site when Georgia Pacific was still in operations, even at that time, it was a much different look. There was massive piles of wood chips that would be imported into the site. It was a beehive of activity. There were conveyor belts and smokestacks and I mean, it was just chock block full with buildings and activity, and today, if you drive by there, a lot of work has been done on the site preparation and the environmental cleanup work that we've completed to date, and it's really a site prepped for the next step. It's gravel and open and ready to be developed on.
Yeah, and Eleanor, during this process, you have led tours of the site. I want to begin with why.
So Resources has led several tours of the waterfront because we think it's really important to show the community what it looks like and how it's changing. We encourage the community. We have a very engaged community here in Bellingham who really values their ability to take part in the public process and be part of the envisioning of the future. And so we like to host tours so that we can better educate the public, answer their questions, and empower them to then make public comments on the cleanup process under the Model Toxics Control Act so that they can then comment, is the cleanup plan clean enough for our community or not?
What kinds of reactions do you get when you're leading a tour through there?
So Georgia Pacific is one of the main sites, and so about a year ago, we had a tour of the Central Waterfront, and some folks showed up and went, oh, I thought I was taking a tour of the Georgia Pacific site. I thought that was the only site. Oh my gosh, there's 12 sites in Bellingham Bay, and then there's a few other volunteer sites too as well. So we have a lot of sites, and that shocks some people. Some people don't fully understand the regulations involved, where under MACA, or Model Toxics Control Act, that the idea is that we're cleaning up our waterfront to the point where we're eliminating the exposure routes of the contaminants so that people and our environment won't be harmed by the contaminants, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we always remove the contaminants, and so that tends to shock people.
When you say limiting the exposure routes, you're basically stopping it in its tracks.
Yeah.
It's gonna stay here, it's not going to move, and that's kind of the way it's going to have to be.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to touch real quickly on, I know you also did a tour on the water. You took some people out on kayaks, and that I understand that was kind of there was a reaction to that.
So we had done a lot of walking tours, some biking tours, and so this was sort of the next step in the process where we took people out by kayak because we felt it was really important for people to see the waterfront as it's changing from the water. And so for some people, it was the first time they're getting out on the water. And for other folks, they were well seasoned. And so we were able to take a tour and show people things like pocket beaches and the habitat opportunities that this waterfront redevelopment has provided. And one of the highlights of the tour actually was we were able to pull up to Waypoint Park, which is one of the first, or just opened to the public for the first time in over about 100 years or so, because industry has been there and it's been contaminated and hasn't been cleaned up. And so this was the first opportunity, and it was a gorgeous day where it was in June and there's a beautiful rainbow over the acid ball, which is a sculpture that's there as a remnant of to remind us of the past history of that area.
And that's a reflective sculpture that's really quite striking. I think people who are listening to this on the radio might hear you say there's a rainbow over the acid ball and want a little more context.
Thanks.
So what exists now is sort of a partnership. The Port of Bellingham is working on this, the State Department of Ecology, the city. I want us to listen to the voice of Tara Sundin, who is the Community and Economic Development Manager for the City of Bellingham. She talked about how people are working well together on this project on the waterfront.
The what and the why happened very quickly. I think that first agreement between the port and the city just took a few months. Sometimes I think how exactly to clean things up or how exactly to put your parks in or where or how much land you used to dedicate to this and that takes a little more time. There are times that it's tough for all of us. It's a complicated site to work with. I guess I've never had anyone question whether or not we should be doing it. It's just, I think, the right thing to do, mostly because the site needs to be cleaned up.
And so I want to ask you both, starting with Brian, is that your sense that people might have differences on the particulars of how, but there's basically widespread agreement on the overarching goal, the overarching idea?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I think from the community-wide, not just on the folks working on the ground here, I mean, community-wide, going all the way back to the visioning process when it initially started kind of the writing on the wall that Georgia Pacific was going to be leaving town, you know, the community came together with a visioning process that was really robust. I mean, all the folks working on the ground, you know, we really work really well together, the port, city, Department of Ecology, Western Washington University, resources, the community, you know, not always in agreement on everything, but yeah, I think that Tara's statement there is right, that there's no doubt that I've heard that this is the right thing to be doing moving forward.
Eleanor, is that your impression too?
Yes, I would say so. On one of our tours, we actually had somebody from Chicago that joined us, and they were just astounded that we were even approaching this situation. Like, we should clean it up. He said, where I come from, we would just leave it.
Wow. So I've been thinking about how this project is working and the decisions you're having to make as a community about what to do with the waterfront. And these aren't just this isn't just redefining a city block. This is basically adding a whole new section of the city. And these are decisions that are going to have to hold up for 60, 80, 100 years. How do you do that? How do you know that you're making a decision, Eleanor, that's going to stand the test of time?
Public engagement is the number one thing. And really, you know, it's been somewhat of a short process, if you look at it in some ways, and been a long process in other ways. And so it's interesting how some of the redevelopment ideas have changed over time, and what we thought it might look like 10, 20 years ago might look different than what it looks like now. The other thing that I, at Resources, really would advocate for in the cleanup process, too, is as we face things like climate change and storm surges, to make sure that our cleanup sites and the cleanup actions are done in a way that will be permanent and be lasting.
Brian, is that what's that like to be part of this process that you know, you're here, frankly, in like your human lifetime, but you're helping make decisions, you're helping shape something that's going to go on for such a long time, and things are changing all the time.
You know, I think there's no doubt that the community recognizes that. I mean, this is a generational opportunity for us. And, you know, I'm just happy to be able to work on this project knowing that my kids and grandkids are going to be, you know, being able to use that, enjoy it. I think that from the looking forward, the two elements that I think about is that from the cleanup side of things, you know, the Department of Ecology has a very robust cleanup requirements under the MODCA law that Eleanor had mentioned. And it's required to be permanent as possible, knowing that there could be changes, catastrophic events, earthquakes, that kind of thing. Of course, you'd have to come back and double-check, fix anything that may not have performed under that scenario. But the idea is that these cleanups are permanent, and that's in perpetuity. And the redevelopment then, of course, yeah, we were looking at that for as a generational opportunity over the next 20, 30 years and really trying to make sure that we get that right.
There are so many parts of our region that are facing big problems, you know, environmental, societal, and I think people can look at those and say, I don't even know where to start. And this seems like one of those things that was that way once upon a time, that people looked at this and said, I don't even know where to begin. Do you remember the early days of this and how people came together and said, okay, let's start here?
Well, I do. I wasn't personally involved in this because it's a little bit before my time. But back in the mid-90s, there was an opportunity where the Department of Ecology and was looking for a comprehensive bay-wide approach to look at these, you know, these large sediment-contaminated bays from the historic industrial practices all over the Pacific Northwest, from the natural resource-based economy for years and years, pulp mills, whatnot. And Bellingham was selected as a pilot project to get state, local, federal agencies, tribal agencies, public involvement all together to comprehensively plan cleanup, habitat, redevelopment, all really looking at that holistically. And that started the process, and we're still working on that. Now we've transformed from this pilot project into this action team that we still get together on a regular basis, all of those groups, to work on this and check in, see how we're making progress, and adjust as needed.
Eleanor, you know, does that still happen? Are there still feelings of, I don't know where to start, or this feels overwhelming?
I would say it's exciting that we're moving along, because it felt like for the last couple of years things have been slowing down. When the economy took a tank, funding became harder to come by to keep moving the cleanup process along. And so it's exciting now that we're coming out with a whole bunch of public comment periods, because we're able to come out with a lot of the reports to get things moving along. So I feel excited that things are moving forward.
And it would have been easy on something like this for people to throw up their hands and say forget it. And that really hasn't happened. What's kept people in the game?
I'd say, you know, humans are always drawn to water, and it's our waterfront. And so our community is always looking at our waterfront, and we have to stare at what's left right now and really think about, like, oh, it'd be so much nicer if that was a place that I could go enjoy, if it was a place that I could go launch my kayak, a place to go watch salmon returning to Whatcom Creek.
There are big environmental goals and wishes here. There are also economic goals, Brian, about making, you know, the economy stronger here. And that's because of your role with the port. I mean, that's kind of the port's role in some part, to bring in people who are going to function on the waterfront. How do you make it attractive to a wide range of businesses?
Well, yeah, it's really worth mentioning as well. You know, the Georgia-Pacific site is one small slice of the larger waterfront district. So the waterfront district itself is broken up, and not just into the kind of right next to downtown area, which is by design is going to be the extension of downtown, the kind of vibrant, mixed-use, urban, residential, restaurants, all that. But the larger area actually also includes the marine trades area, which is a major focus of the Port of Bellingham, obviously, supporting and expanding our marine trades in and around the Whatcom County, supporting the redevelopment of the downtown waterfront and parks and public access. Then the Bellingham Shipping Terminal, with trying to restart the shipping terminal and bring in more import-export in that area, as well as a major public waterfront park that's at the south end of the site, which is the Cornwall Beach Park. So we really focus from the port side of things, not only on the cleanup and redevelopment, but on one of our mission statements is for entire Whatcom County is economic development. So we look to try to bring jobs into Bellingham and into Whatcom County, expand, you know, the working waterfront so that we can retain jobs and expand those. And we've looked at All American Marine as a great example, which is a boat builder here in town that was about to leave the state, actually. And we worked with them and relocated their facility to a brand new facility in the waterfront district in the marine trades area. And then we also have supported the local solar panel manufacturer, ITEC. They purchased a piece of property on the GP site and now relocated their manufacturing facility there.
I think when big issues are presented, sometimes it's presented as this versus that, you know, A versus B. And what I've heard this week is a lot of people who have kind of a foot in each world or are looking at this more holistically than my way or nothing
the whole redevelopment has been a really collaborative process, and for an environmental nonprofit like Resources, it's been a really great opportunity for us to work with the labor industry on this, where we can have all of these things coexisting, where we do have a vibrant economy as well as restoring habitat along the waterfront. And so I'm excited for how things are moving forward.
Describe the waterfront 20 years from now, Eleanor.
20 years from
now. Paint a picture. Give me one image. What am I going to see?
My image is that there's habitat connectivity for salmon along the waterfront, happy, healthy habitat, as well as a wonderful trail that people can bike along and walk their dogs and access, as well as lots of places to stop for, you know, coffee and enjoy the waterfront while there's people, you know, working and living in apartments right adjacent to where you are.
Brian, 2038?
Geez, that summed it all up pretty well. But I would say the one thing that I want to add to that is just, you know, what our one of the main goals is to have a connection, a pedestrian connection from north of Bellingham all the way down to Fairhaven and cut through the middle of the site and along the waterfront. That's a huge goal.
All right. Well, Eleanor Hines and Brian Gowron, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. You are listening to KNKX. I'm Ed Ronco. Just before the break, we listened to a conversation that we broadcast from the Mount Baker Theater in Bellingham about the redevelopment of the city's waterfront. We heard from Brian Gowron, representing the Port of Bellingham, and Eleanor Hines with the environmental nonprofit Resources for Sustainable Communities. They stuck around with us and with our audience at the Mount Baker Theater for about an hour.
Okay, so I'm going to grab this microphone.
As we all sat together and talked through some of the questions members of the community have about the project.
Hi, my name is Christy Marshall. I'm a native hamster who came to realize what a treasure this corner of the country is when I was away from the home for 4 years in the Army. I still can't believe, 40 years ago. I would like to know how decisions are made regarding which and what kind of restaurants, retail businesses, and how many condo and apartment buildings will be established, and how are developers selected. In addition, I'm wondering if there will be any thought to incorporating low-income housing on the waterfront.
And before the answers, I want to say for the people who are going to listen to this on the radio, a native hamster.
Native hamster,
is
yes.
Somebody who is from Bellingham, because the collective noun...
Yes.
Is Belling hamster?
Hamsters.
It really is?
Yes, we're hamsters.
All right.
Yeah, and when I say native, I mean I was born here at the old St. Joseph Hospital,
yeah.
Which is now apartment buildings over on the south side.
I grew up a Michigander, so
Michigander,
I understand the whole...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so let's hear the response.
So this goes into a little bit more detail, but essentially the port has entered into a master development agreement with a developer called Harcourt Developments. So that's for about 19 acres of property... in the downtown waterfront. This was designed in a couple ways. One is it's not a wholesale of property of those 19 acres to Harcourt. It's on a project-by-project basis. So Harcourt comes to the Port Commission and proposes a project, whether it has to fit within the land use and the zoning, so it could be a residential project, it could be a mixed-use development, it could be an office space. And it's their responsibility to say that this fits with the plan, this fits with how the master plan and the zoning allows us to do that. Assuming that it fits with all those things, we will work with them to approve that project and then sell them that parcel. So that's on a project-by-project basis. But for regarding your second question on the affordable housing, yeah, there is a provision in the master plan and in our agreement with the city on how this all gets built out that there'll be a minimum of 10% of the housing units will be for affordable housing.
During the forum, there were also concerns about the cleanup process and also about what happens once the waterfront is more actively in use.
This is going to take a lot of energy. What are the plans of the waterfront to create energy for all this business and living
in the downtown waterfront, which is that extension of the downtown? We're currently installing a district energy system, so there'll be a district-wide facility that all new development in that downtown core has to connect to. So that's they're required to connect to that system. So that really provides a lot of efficiencies for the individual buildings. Don't have to have their own HVAC system or their own boiler that will connect to a district-wide facility that is a hot water system. We are actually installing the pipes as we speak, and we're negotiating with the energy provider for that right now, with the anticipation that all new development in that downtown area will connect up to that district energy system.
Members of the community had questions and comments, and so did some organizations and organizers.
Hello, I'm Michelle Stelvich, and I'm president of the Northwest Washington Central Labor Council.
And she wanted to know, will the jobs that go in along the waterfront be sustainable, good-paying jobs that can maintain an economy?
Because I'm concerned that if we have hotels and coffee shops, those aren't jobs necessarily that you can sustain and live in Bellingham. We like to see work that's that people could live in and stay in this community. We'd like to see this as an opportunity to develop apprenticeships.
Again, Brian Gowron from the Port of Bellingham.
As a public agency, you know, the Port of Bellingham, all the projects that we do is definitely all prevailing wage work. All the public work projects use that industry standard. You know, I think back to one of my initial points earlier was that, you know, the waterfront district is much larger than the downtown waterfront extension, which is actually a relatively small portion of the redevelopment, where there is planned to have hotels and retail and coffee shops and breweries. In Bellingham, breweries might actually be a pretty good living wage job. But aside from that, but you know, the main focus of the port is to expand our marine trades areas. You know, working with All American Marine is a great example of that. iTech Energy.
All American Marine is a boat builder that almost moved out of state in order to expand. But with land at the waterfront available, the company was able to stay in Bellingham. The other company you mentioned, iTech, is Washington State's largest maker of solar panels. But does that work alongside other uses, like apartments or stores or parks? Here's Eleanor Hines.
All of those things can coexist, and I appreciate that all the community members are coming together and voicing those opinions. And I feel like so far the city and the port have been listening to those.
Coming together was another theme of the conversation we had in Bellingham. Different interest groups, for example, labor, the environment, industry, city and state government, and the port, are all working together for a common goal. They say it wasn't always easy. Gowron noted that in the beginning there were some tense periods of disagreement. But while groups are still debating how Bellingham's waterfront will be remade, there seems to be broader agreement over the fact that this is a project worth pursuing. Amy Pashoff stepped to the microphone and said she's been paying attention to the redevelopment plans since almost the moment Georgia Pacific closed its operations in Bellingham.
My husband and I moved here more than 10 years ago when we found out this big polluter had been shut down and you were redeveloping the waterfront is the main reason we moved here.
That said, her question had to do with whether the waterfront's dubious environmental history might repeat itself.
What do you have in place as far as regulations to make sure that businesses that do move to our waterfront are not polluters and we hold them accountable? And, you know, where does that stand?
The environmental regulations have changed so much from when, you know, Georgia Pacific first started. Well, there weren't even environmental regulations at all in the 30s, right? So that whole thing has changed so much ever since the Clean Water Act, et cetera. And right now, I mean, our biggest risk is stormwater. I mean, and I think we work really closely with risk to contamination, recontamination is mostly from diffuse sources like stormwater. And we work really closely with resources. The city of Bellingham has a source control and stormwater program. Whatcom County really is a critical component of that, of looking at that. The other thing that the port has is for all of our tenants, we have an environmental compliance assessment program where we go through and audit all of our tenants and do, depending on what type of industry it is, and we go and look to see, okay, are they managing their waste correctly? Are they storing their chemicals correctly? And if not, then we have, you know, an audit, and then we have a lease provision on how we can address that. So we really are trying to prevent even current tenants that we have from creating a problem like we've had from the past.
What's happening along Bellingham's waterfront has been in the works for more than a decade, and there might be a decade or two more before the vision is fully realized. It is a slow process, but it's one the community seems to have committed to. And at times, when people could have easily thrown their hands into the air, they've somehow persisted.
Yeah, hello. My name's Ryan.
Which brings us to the final piece of our conversation at the Mount Baker Theater.
Eleanor, you kind of mentioned earlier about talking with some folks from Chicago and how, you know, they might do things a little differently over there. How would you go about convincing someone from a different part of the country with different ideals and different, like, or not convincing, but engaging in a responsible conversation with them on, like, you know, kind of educating them about how, you know, a project like this might benefit them and how it might fit into the greater future for their community and the country at large.
So I guess for starters, one of the things that really attracted me to the Bellingham area when I moved here was that there was a real sense of pride in our community, but with that pride also came this strong advocacy to always improve it. Have pride in your city and have pride in the place that you live, for starters, and then never, you know, underestimate the power that you as an individual can have on affecting a change. It really comes from, you know, I wonder how much of our waterfront would be the way it is now if the public didn't have any insistence that we needed to change it. So I think starting with public insistence is the first place to start. You know, thinking outside the box, what could that space really be used for? What could the community really use? And how could that space really fit those needs?
What could that space be used for? Well, not all of those questions are answered yet in Bellingham. And the conversation we hosted last week is just one of many that have happened and that will happen. The people who live there and work there and own companies there are continuing to figure out the future, and they are fully aware that they are making decisions that will shape the way Bellingham both looks and feels into the next century. And those conversations could be coming to a city near you, too, as many places up and down Western Washington look at their waterfront and wonder, what if?